Apple Podcast.
Not another Apple Podcast.
Not another Apple Podcast.
Not another Apple Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to a new Not Another Apple Podcast. I'm not saying it right. Not Another Apple Podcast show. We've made a change, but we'll be coming back at you every other week now. My former co-host Blake Patterson had some personal business and scheduling conflicts, but he remains a friend of the show and hopefully will join us as a guest soon one day. So who am I? I'm David Grillish from Atlanta, Georgia, and I am joined by my new co-host, Scott Wilsey, from somewheres near Portland, Oregon. So, hey, Scott, how are you doing this fine evening for me? I guess late afternoon for you.
Yep, I'm doing great, David. Thank you. To anybody that has heard me on other podcasts, my sincere apologies. To anybody that hasn't, just disregard what I said.
Scott also co-hosts the Pocket Size Podcast each week. And I'm very happy to be joined by you, Scott, and I'm ready to go, and we're going to take it to another level, Not Another Apple Podcast.
Yes, Not Another Level. So this is not another episode of Not Another Apple Podcast.
Oh, wait, you know what? And also, ironically, I guess it's, I don't know if it's ironic or not, but I have met you, I guess, by way of my friend and yours, Mark Tree, who was on another Mac podcast, who I now been a guest on, and of course I met him because of the similar name of this show.
Yes, indeed.
Yep. So that's kind of neat how that all worked out. He was kind of mad at me at first.
He was,
and I was kind of defensive. But
you know, his modus operandi is to to rant, and then he calms down. And
yeah, great guy, real nice guy.
He is.
And you know, I'm a regular listener now to that show as well as the geekiest show ever. I was just listening to it on the way home from work today. In fact, I think it was like a couple days old, but you know, I just got around to it.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, on today's show, what we decided to talk about, the name of the show is to try to take current events of Apple, and they don't always have to be current events, but current Apple, and reflect back on the past Apple and sort of compare and contrast and discuss and that sort of a thing. So with the recent news about the Apple versus Samsung patent case, we decided to compare and contrast that case with some other lawsuits Apple's been a part of in the past, and what you might call the look and feel lawsuits. And just to mention too, interestingly, is I didn't notice this until later or earlier today in putting this show together, but on our last show, me and Blake discussed sort of similar leads up to this, two main topics. First was a comparison and contrast between PC and Mac platform with a look back on them, as well as a comparison and contrast between the iOS and Android platforms. And then we basically compared and contrasted the similarities and differences between the desktop laptop OS wars with the current, if you will, handheld mobile OS wars. So this topic today falls under those topics, that umbrella, whatever.
Yeah, and I gotta say, with your referencing the last podcast, I gotta tell you, I really am excited to be a part of this because one of the things that I really liked about your podcast is that it does do that, and it compares and contrasts to the historical situations. And you know, it's interesting how many people you run into now that use Apple products that don't know anything about Apple history. They really don't know where this stuff came from. They don't know how the company started. They just don't know. And you know, why should they? But for people like us that have been around for a while and we have some gray whiskers and all that, it's kind of interesting and exciting to hear that stuff again. And then maybe, hopefully, you know, put it in front of people that maybe haven't heard all of it before.
Right, exactly. And that was part of the, two sort of motivations, you know, had me sort of come up with the idea of the show was I really want to do an Apple podcast. As much as I love computer history and talking about all kinds of old different kinds of computers, Apple's sort of the, you know, my first love, and the Macintosh especially. But then I thought this would be a unique opportunity to attract the general public or populace more to history, computer history and technology history. Yeah, by having both. So yeah. The past and the present.
Yeah. Computer history is definitely interesting. It's amazing how far it's come to, you know, think about your iPhone that you hold now, and then think about your first computer and realize that you've got so much more power in the palm of your hand now than you did with your first computer. And it's just amazing.
What's even more amazing too, is that the iPhone's 5 years old.
Yes, I know, it actually is, because I keep telling myself I'm going to start, I keep starting to learn how to program for iOS, you know, Cocoa and Xcode and all that. And I do a little bit here and there, and then I don't do it again. And now, exactly what you're saying, I look at that and I go, okay, well, 5 years ago or 4 years ago when they brought out the SDK, I was going to get started. And yeah, how much progress have I made on that?
And just speaking of, so as a computer collector, so I just pulled out of my drawer here the original iPod. So I finally broke down and said, I need to hurry up and get one of these while I can in decent condition. And so I finally got one. I think I paid $70 for it, and it's got some scratches on it and stuff, but it's in pretty good clean condition. So sort of a must-have part of the collection. But I just negotiated with someone to get an original iPhone. Cool. You know, in the box and the packaging and good condition, you know, minor scratches on the back or whatever.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's, so I'm really happy about that. I should be getting that real soon.
Cool.
So I think $70 too is what, yeah. Same price.
That's not bad. So
not bad. Yep. And it works. Even though visually it won't, and that'll be okay. So why don't you lead us off, Scott, and I guess tell us and the listeners about the current Apple. Well, I guess the end of the case between Apple and Samsung.
Yeah, Apple and Samsung have been going at each other for a while, and the end result is that in order to get this case done, Apple had to drop some of the complaints, some of the technical issues that they had, and focus on a few patents that they wanted to have included in the case. But finally, this thing went to trial, and it went in front of a jury, and the jury voted, and they came back, and they found that Samsung was violating Apple patents, and they have to pay for it. And it was just kind of interesting to see the reaction in the press and the reaction with people, because there's a valid discussion about the patent system today. Is it out of control? Is it what it should be? Is this best for technology to have these patents like this, and to have all these companies snatching up as many patents as they can so they can fight each other in court? And those are valid questions. What's really clear in this case, though, regardless of how you feel about the patent system and whether or not Apple should have the ability to fight with these patents or not, what's very clear to me is that Samsung has been copying Apple. You know, I mentioned to you as we were talking beforehand, I keep reading these comments, these people saying that Apple's more of a marketing company than a technology company. And yet Apple spent years developing the iPhone. We've read much of the history of, you know, not the technical details, but some of the history behind when they decided to start developing it, how long it took and all that. They developed the iPhone, they came out with it, and immediately all smartphones started looking like the iPhone. It didn't take long at all, and Samsung was one of those. I think it took them, I read somewhere it took them 3 months to come out with a competitor that looked quite similar to the iPhone, and before everything had been different. So it's clear to me that Apple has to be a technology company, because they were the basis for any modern smartphone that you look at now that right. has the appearance, at least the appearance of Apple technology in it. So this lawsuit is going to be very interesting going forward to see what happens. How does it change the industry? How does it change the behavior of different companies? And I really think what Apple was trying to do here was protect future products, because they know every time they come out with something, somebody's going to copy it. And they're also fighting against Android in general. You know, Android has been infringing upon patents. There have been claims that Google knew they were going to infringe on patents, and rather than working it out beforehand, they just said, let's infringe and see how far we get. Supposedly,
which is what really sort of to me jumps out too, is why isn't Apple suing Google? Which I know is, I'm not the first one to state that. But yeah. We'll talk about it more later. But, you know, so there's also a lawsuit going on between HTC and Apple, another right. Android handset maker. You know, they're not making the Android OS. And then, you know, Samsung. But why isn't Apple suing Google?
Right. So, yep, they are. It's clear that what they're doing is they're going after the people who are implementing it. And I think the reason why is because Google isn't making any money with Android. They make money through advertising that's implemented in Android, but they don't make any money with Android itself because they're giving it away to the handset makers. And I do believe that's part of it. I'm not a lawyer, so But my understanding is that legally that would be the best approach. I don't think they can go after Google if Google's not making money at it. Although it seems to me like you can still infringe on patents whether you're making money on them or not, but I'm not a lawyer. The other thing is that it seems like it's easier probably for them to get some victories against these other companies before they go after Android wholesale. And my understanding is also that Google has been making changes in the later versions of Android to try to stop infringing on these patents. So I think from Google's point of view, this issue will become less as time goes on. Although, as we've seen, how long does it take Google handsets to get updated? Forever. And some of them can't be updated to newer versions of Android. So as time goes forward, people will get eventually newer versions of Android. And over time, the issue will go away for Google. But for now, it's certainly an issue for these other companies that are using older versions of Android that do have infringements in them.
Oh, if I can just make a couple of statements real quick while they're in my mind, because I'm ADD, by the way, so I'll forget it. I just wrote it down. Well, because when you're talking about, let me just state it, is that, so here's a quick comparison too about how, and I don't know what it was, when you said about the iPhone, and I totally agree with you, when it came out in 2007, basically the way you would use a smartphone, it completely redefined it. The touch screen, the gesturing, a flat pit, its design, physical design and such, and much the same way as the Mac did. Arguably when the Lisa came out in 1983, I guess you could really say it was the Lisa. But so the Lisa slash more big time when the Mac came out in 1984, I mean, it became clear that this is how all computers would need to work going forward.
Yep, absolutely.
So how much, and we'll talk more about some of those lawsuits a little bit later, but it's kind of like how many different ways can you design? So there's an argument against is like, when someone first came up with where to position the steering wheel in an automobile, where to put the speedometer and the horn and the brake and all that kind of stuff, it's almost like, where else can you put them?
Yeah.
So other people are stealing the interface, if you will, but it's like now it's been defined about how things are supposed to be. Another thing I wanted to mention real quick too is when you're talking about patents, it all of a sudden clicked in my head and made me remember Steve Jobs mentioned this when he introduced the iPhone in 2007. He said, patents, we've got patents.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yep. He said, boy, did we patent it. Yep.
Yeah. A number of times.
Yeah.
So about whether Apple's a marketing company or a technology company. I mean, they're obviously both. But so obviously he was very concerned from the get-go about the technology being stolen and probably because of what happened, with the earlier lawsuits and Windows versus the Mac OS and all that.
Yeah, and you bring up an excellent point about the history of it and Apple's philosophy towards it, because I hear a lot of people saying, well, Apple stole the mm-hmm. basis for the Mac operating system way back when, so look at them, they're no better, and all these other things. The thing is that yes, they did steal stuff, but one thing that Apple does, which I believe, detractors might not, but I believe Apple will take something and they don't just copy it. They put their own spin on it. They change it. Mac OS was a prime example. They came out with overlapping windows, which yeah. Bill Atkinson thought that Xerox had done, but they hadn't done that. He invented that stuff.
Right.
And
they completely redefined it. And, they streamlined it and they refined it.
Yeah.
Did I ever say that?
And my understanding too is that Xerox gave them, I think that the engineers didn't want to, but my understanding is Apple made an agreement with Xerox, which much to the consternation of many people at Xerox, gave Apple the right to go ahead and use their technology. Steve Jobs basically robbed them blind, but he did it with their permission. So it's not, I don't think that in every case you can say Apple just goes in and steals stuff. I'm not saying that Apple's innocent of all copying. Certainly, as you pointed out, every technology company finds that the best way to do something is this way or whatever, and you're going to use those good ideas. Of course you are. But you also can't debate the fact that in this case, Samsung really cranked up their copy machine to a higher degree and were much more shameless about it than anybody's been for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to sort of clarify on the whole Xerox PARC, Apple thing is, Apple and negotiated with Xerox to have two visits with the engineers, Steve Jobs and the engineers and stuff from Apple in trade so that Apple was not a public company yet, and Xerox saw them as this huge rising star, and they wanted to invest in Apple as just as a good investment. So that's what Apple traded with them for, is Xerox was then allowed to invest so much money. I don't remember how much. But also, just to point out some of the innovations or refinements that Apple created, and Steve Jobs was very prominent in his decisions, was, for instance, the Xerox Alto and the Star had a three-button mouse. So, okay, three versus one. Three's not that complicated, but you know what? A one-button mouse was far easier. The Xerox interface had pop-up menus that could be anywhere on the screen versus Apple innovated the pull-down menus where they lived along the top. They refined what you might call the desktop, you know, metaphor, even though that was an invention of Xerox PARC. But they basically definitely, I guess they stole the ideas, but they refined them, and they created new things, and they simplified things. So like Steve Jobs was very big on, and a lot of people didn't agree with him on this, like again, the one button mouse, and he didn't want a lot of command key shortcuts and stuff that people had to learn to remember, because that was sort of the bad thing going on with in the DOS world. I don't know if you ever used like WordPerfect 5.1, but you had to memorize all these things. I used to have to keep like a sheet next to me to remember F this, F that.
Right. Highly appropriate, so, by the way.
So, you know, the early Mac interface, everything was in the pull-down menus. So, which made it easy.
I guess you could argue that Steve Jobs only copied one of their mouse buttons, whereas Samsung copied all of Apple's icons.
So. And what a lot of people don't realize too is Xerox PARC did not invent the mouse or right. even bitmap displays or a lot of those things. They also licensed it, borrowed it, whatever you will, from the Stanford SRI or whatever, where Douglas Engelbart, they are working on these things. So you know, people borrow and take and build upon and so on.
Yeah, it's interesting going forward, and I think that the conversation about the patent system and about how long tech patents should be valid and what should be patentable in the first place, I think these are fine conversations to have. I'm not one of these guys who, you know, because it's in Apple's favor, I'm not going to defend the patent system necessarily. I think there is some brokenness to it, and I think it does need to be fixed. Yeah, it just so happens that I'm a guy who likes the products of the company that's winning right now, but that doesn't mean that I like to see these companies in court like this, as opposed to just making products. Now, in Apple's case, I don't believe that's the case. I think they are making products. I don't think this is a matter of them litigating to be competitive. They're competitive already. They have the single most popular phone. They're not outselling Android in terms of sheer market share, but there's also 1.1 billion Android phones out there. In terms of the most popular phone, which phone do people want? They want the iPhone. So it's not that Apple is just litigating to be popular. They already are popular, and they're trying to protect their patents. I do believe that.
Yeah, I mean, but also you can't blame, in my opinion anyway, I can't blame Apple for, I don't think anyone at Apple has a problem with fair competition saying, oh, you know, okay, you beat us. If you got a product and other people prefer it and you're winning from that standpoint, then, you know, we can't complain. But if you're stealing, just flat out ripping off, you know, what we've worked on and refined and created and standardized, and you're just flat out ripping it off, which, you know, Android is a pretty big ripoff.
I mean,
it's just really clear. If you look at some of these articles that we, you know, we have, they'll be in the show notes, and then look at the patent drawings and stuff. It's not like, you know, it's really not quite the same thing as, the Apple versus Xerox. It really is a lot like the Windows and Mac.
Yeah, and I think it is. And I think that it's pretty clear also from articles that I've seen on the web that the concept of what the Google phone was going to be definitely changed after the iPhone came out, or at least after, what's his name, you know, was on the board of Apple's board.
Not Schmidt, was it?
Yeah, Eric Schmidt. And so he had access to this stuff, and there was a massive change where, hey, what do you know? All of a sudden it doesn't look so much like these, you know, button filled. Right. It doesn't look so much like a BlackBerry or, you know, who was the other one that had the phone out there? Palm. Was it Palm? Who had the the Trio?
Well, yeah, stuff right, like that. Right.
So it went away from looking more like those types of smartphones and looking, you know, very similar to the iPhone. There was a change there. So yeah, I think it's fair to say that in a lot of ways, Android is a huge ripoff.
Right. And what's happened in So speaking of which, in the last Not Another Apple podcast, I think one of these articles had we looked at like a growth chart or whatever. But, you know, so off the top of my head, the iPhone still dominates as the single most popular platform, iOS, because, you know, only Apple makes it and they only make the one product, the iPhone. But, you know, Android still across all the other manufacturers it is winning, if you will, or outsells it.
Yeah.
Have you read that? Recently, I don't know. What is it now? Is it like, I don't know, is it 60% market share or something like that? So, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, so all of a sudden, in a few years, you know, Android's, you know, I mean, obviously Apple's doing very well and no one can say that, you know, Android's stomping them or anything. But, you know, why should Apple be losing market share when, you know, unfairly, if that's the case?
It's okay. You know, Apple has never. And, you know, this may have changed. I'm not privy to Apple's thinking. I don't sit in their meetings and listen to them. But they've always been more about making profits and making good devices that make profits than about market share. They forgot about market share with the Mac, and they've been doing great. They've actually been gaining market share. With iOS devices, I'm sure they probably would like to have the most market share. But what they definitely don't want is exactly what you're saying. They don't want somebody else to come along and take the lion's share of the market share with Apple being their research department. That just doesn't seem right.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's what they're trying to fight here. The thing is, I'm curious what will happen going forward. So now, what other lawsuits is Apple going to make? What other patents are they going to try to enforce that they had to drop for this lawsuit to get it through because there was just too much and the judge was not going to accept all those patents as a part of this lawsuit? Who else, you know, what's going to happen with HTC? What's going to happen with some of these others? And also, interestingly enough, what is Samsung going to do? Are they going to start going the Microsoft route? Or is the fact that future versions of Android supposed to be infringement clean, quote unquote, are they going to continue down that path? So it's going to have an effect in the industry. The question, I guess, going forward is what will it be? And we don't know until it happens.
Yeah, what about Google still? Even though
Yep. Yeah, it's
I gotta think they would want to fight Google at this point. I mean, whether they make any money off it or not, they're the ones, you know, they're the drug dealer.
Yeah.
I think they're the ones making it.
Yeah. I think in Samsung's case, though, Samsung took, you know, Android, which had some infringements, no doubt, but they also did a lot of their own custom work. And a lot of the custom work is what Apple really objected to, because Samsung has gone so far as to copy their power plugs, copy their boxing, copy their look of the phone, and copy the icons, just wholesale ripping off the look of the icons in a way that Android itself doesn't do.
Okay.
So I think it's a little bit of both, but if Google really is, you know, working on altering Android so that they're not going to be, you know, in trouble with these patent infringements and all that, then, you know, what can Apple do? There's not a whole lot, and I'm sure they're fine with it, but it still remains the fact that Apple came up with this style of smartphone that everybody in the universe uses now, and that came from Apple. You can't really change that.
Right.
So what about the history? Because this is what's interesting to me. You mentioned that this is very similar to another case, and maybe we should talk about that.
Well, the first thing I want to mention about that, which didn't jump out at me at first, and I guess I knew this, and it didn't really click. See if it clicks with you, or I didn't really think about it. But the biggest single difference between the past and now, or with these current lawsuits, you know, is that buzzword patent. These are patent suits versus all the ones in the past were copyright infringements, or that's what they fell under. Look and feel, and what's another word? A trade dress. So look and feel, trade dress. Copyright infringement lawsuits.
Yeah.
So one of the first ones was Apple sued GEM, which is capital GEM. And have you ever heard of them? It was a little graphical user interface that was came out by Digital Research. And, you know, we could talk all day about them too.
Okay.
They're an early manufacturer of a disk operating system for PCs and other devices, but CPM. And then there's a whole story about, you know, IBM went looking for an operating system and Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Screwed them all, which isn't all true, you know, but.
Yeah.
So basically they came out with a program in the mid 1980s. You know, I'm trying to find where's the exact dates. I think it was 80, it definitely was, I believe, was after the Lisa. I'm going to say like 84, 85. But then so Apple ended up suing them, and some of their complaints were that the disk drive icons on the desktop, you know, look just like and if you go to Wikipedia, look at the article in the show notes, you can really see this. Looks just like the Macs, movable and resizable windows in the file manager, shading and title bars. Now tell me, does this sort of sound similar to? And yeah, window open close animations and scroll bar thumbs.
Well, if you look at the image there, it does look a lot. I mean,
yeah. So that was Jim 1.1, and basically Digital Research decided to they didn't fight them, you know, they settled. And so with Jim 2.0, they changed it. So that was with DRI and Jim. And probably the most famous suit, though, came after that. It started in 85, and I think it got settled in 89 or 88, 89. But it was, you know, Apple versus Microsoft. So I think everybody's kind of heard of this one. So it was – oh, no, it says it was filed in 88.
This is the part about it that surprised me was that it wasn't resolved
until 94.
Yeah, I did not realize that. Yeah. I didn't because when I think about my life and what I knew about Apple and what I was using, I thought this happened before that, but no.
And you saw me sort of stumbling around on dates and stuff too, because I was kind of thinking, I guess maybe 85 was the DRI, but I had kind of was thinking it was much earlier too. Because so basically, in a nutshell, Apple had agreed to license certain parts of the, you know, of their look and feel of the GUI to Microsoft to use a Windows 1.0, and then everything was happy and, you know, in paradise. But then Windows 2.0 came out and it had overlapping windows and some other features which made it start looking like the Macintosh. And so I guess that was roughly around 87 or so. And so Apple, like, you know, screamed foul at that point, and Microsoft wouldn't change. So then they filed suit against them. And so that was 1988. And then between 88 and when it was affirmed on appeal. So I guess they failed one time, then they appealed.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of. Maybe I knew that they had failed, and that was the decision that I was thinking of. And I didn't realize that the affirmation came later in 1994, and that was the end of it.
So during that time too, by 1990, of course, Windows 3 had come out, and then 91 Windows 3.1. So as Microsoft was refining Windows, Apple was adding, you know, all right, like they're infringing now with this and this and this and this and this. Yes, you know, so Apple was just, you know, really ticked off about the whole thing. So basically what happened though was out by the time I guess they lost the first time, they had 189 GUI elements listed. And the court decided that 179 of these elements had already been licensed. You know, Apple didn't agree with this, of course, but they decided that 179 of these fell under the original license to Microsoft in the Windows 1.0 agreement. And so which only left 10 elements that were not copyrightable.
Wow.
So they were either unoriginal Apple or they were the only possible way of expressing a particular item. So there you go. Kind of like the sort of dashboard of a car. Like, how else are you going to do it? It just makes sense. It's logical. You can't say only we can do it this way. And frankly, in defense or devil's advocate against Apple a little bit, there's some things about the iOS and just the iPhone. And I mean, for instance, the way an iPhone or a smartphone, let's say, is shaped, or a tablet, you can pretty strongly argue, how else are you going to design it now?
Yeah, and I think that's a valid argument. Like, the people that were getting upset about Apple trying to, you know, their perception, and I don't know if Apple really tried to patent this or not, but their perception that Apple wants to patent any slab of glass with rounded corners, I can understand it because, yeah, what are you going to do? Make a phone with square corners that is bowed outwards? Or what are you going to do? You know, it's a pretty obvious design.
And to that point, too, as I wanted to mention, it's funny too, because I've been trying to get one of these, just to mention, for a few years now, and I just found one on Craigslist somewhere else, not in my area, but I've emailed the guy. Do you remember the eMachines E1 by any chance?
Yeah, I do, because friends that wanted to buy those.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it was a ripoff, you know, the iMac and basically Apple. So here's a case where Apple sued them as part of a trade dress, saying that, you know, they flat out have copied our look and feel design, and they won. And then eMachines had to kill that off. So that was 1999. But some of the impact of the Microsoft case was that the original licensing agreements between Apple and Microsoft for Windows made the case more of a contractual matter versus copyright law. And so this meant that the court avoided a far more reaching look and feel copyright precedent sort of ruling.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that tech patents, or, you know, because they were doing this for copyright instead of patents, I don't think they had the tech patents back then that they do now. Am I correct on that?
Yes. Or at least, you know, there wasn't, and you know, it wasn't as well known, or it wasn't, what am I trying to say? People just, it just was new. You know, people didn't know, and courts and judges and jurors, whoever, they just weren't, you know. I had found a comment on one of these. Here we go. Here's a comment that, so Tom B. said this. This is to the Technologizer article that that we have listed. In 1988, few judges knew the first thing about computers. If they had, Microsoft would have had a much more difficult time, I suspect, broadening its license agreement with Apple, as it did to the extent of being allowed to publish a whole knockoff OS. So I thought that was a really good point.
Yeah, and as a result of that lawsuit, I think you had a link to one of the articles. I'm not sure, but anyway, either it was from an article that you had a link to or something I found. Somebody was saying that if Apple would have not worried about the lawsuit and they were putting all their eggs in one basket, figuring that they were going to win, and so they weren't continuing to innovate, and then Microsoft won. I don't necessarily agree with that, but what I do agree with
is back in 88 and all that.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
What I do agree with is the fact that Microsoft's being able to do this definitely allowed them to dominate the industry. And I think it's fair to say that Apple was creating problems for themselves as well. There's probably other reasons. They weren't helping themselves dominate the industry at the same time that Microsoft was winning these legal battles and being able to use this product and dominate the industry too. There was more reasons than this, but this had to be a big kick in the teeth.
I think, in defense of course, 1988, 1994, it was primarily the John Sculley era, which, I've written about and spoken to the guy. And, the guy had many flaws, but I guess you could say I'm a bit of a defender of him.
Well, I think he does get an unfair rap. He really does.
Yeah. Well, so what I was going to say is, you have to think back, it really has only been recently that, hardware or speed and power of computers still grows, but not like it was. So, you got to consider back in the late 80s. The OS was kind of developing a lot slower because it really wasn't the key. The drive was hardware. And look at a Mac from 1988, look at a Mac in 1994, and boy, oh boy, was there a lot of evolution and growth and innovation and so on. I don't think anybody could say there wasn't, whether it was John Sculley or whoever the heck else was at, Apple, regardless of whether it was in boring beige boxes or, there's a big difference in, and there was a lot of innovation at Apple, like the PowerBook was a huge innovation during that time. So, but I guess with the Mac OS, what really happened there was just it went to color. So, in 1988, you first had your first color Mac operating system. Then you got the MultiFinder. And then with System 7, you got it integrated, multitasking operating system, though I know it wasn't true multitasking.
Yeah, I agree. I understand what you're saying. Yeah, it's not that they weren't doing anything. It's just, conditions. Maybe it was business conditions. Maybe it had to do with pricing. It definitely had a lot to do with their legal battles against Microsoft, but the end result was, as a result, Apple suffered. They suffered in the marketplace.
I think so.
And how much of that has to do with their tenacity in these lawsuits against people like Samsung today? You have to think that even though a lot of these guys weren't there at the time, some of them were. Steve Jobs certainly was when this whole thing with Android started. Mm-hmm. And you have to think that this rushes to the forefront of their mind, and there's no freaking way they're going to let these guys get away with it, in their minds. You have to think that's a major factor.
Yeah, and I think, and detractors can say all they want about Apple being the most, profitable company in the world, the most, monetized, whatever. I know they're a very wealthy, big company, and by all means, and they've worked for it. So I got no problem with that. But, there's still no Microsoft of the late 90s. They don't command 90% of the market share of anything. So I think there's still they can still remember what happened to the Mac. you know, and kind of, you know, and I'm sure Steve Jobs and a lot of other people have been there a lot of years, sort of unfairly so. You know, the Mac was better than Windows. It didn't deserve to be the, you know, the small player that it ended up being.
It's interesting, too. In an article that I found, the guy was kind of railing against Apple and why can't they compete with products instead of in the courtroom? And they were saying that Apple's the biggest company in the world. And how is Samsung going to defend themselves against that? It's kind of interesting that there's an article called Samsung Power, Corruption, and Lies. And it's very interesting. And it's about a trip to Korea. And it's kind of interesting that some of the ways that people are from the outside are looking at Samsung in Korea is that Samsung actually has power that it's wielding, that it gets through corruption and basically by being the big dog in Korea. So I'm not saying that's true, but I'm saying that this vision of Samsung indicates to me that is it possible, you know, that Samsung drives itself as this massive company in South Korea and they don't have any competitors with what they do. Well, if that's true, I think this is a company that's not only taking care of itself, it doesn't need defended from Apple. I don't buy that as Samsung is the poor, lonely underdog that's getting kicked around by Apple. I just don't.
Is this here in kernelmag.com?
Yeah.
Samsung Power, Corruption, and Lies.
Right.
From earlier this month. Yeah, by Mick Wright.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's another article in the New York Times that says book on Samsung divides Korea. And it's another interesting book about Korea that, you know, of course the people at Samsung are saying it's a lie, but they're talking about the founding of it, the corruption scandals, the, you know, the things that go on that make it seem like, okay, Samsung got to where it is for a reason. It's not all, you know, ponies and, you know, rainbows and all that. So anyway, I guess my point is, I don't believe that a company that's as big as Samsung is at any way at a disadvantage to Apple in terms of being able to defend themselves and be able to come up with products that are competitive. I don't see it that way at all. They're not the David in this situation. They're just not.
No, I totally agree. I mean, to make us some another type of analogy is that, you know what, they're both adults.
Right.
And they're both mature adults and they can, you know what I mean? And they got to, you know, either sink or swim by their actions and, you know, and either, you know, pay for what's wrong and do what's right.
Yeah, these are two grown men in the fist fight. It's not some guy dragging his child around by the arm in public. No.
So maybe to wrap up this discussion, there's so much more we could talk about. And so listeners, go to the show notes. There's going to be lots of links here. There's one thing that's very different, too, which to the last point even, about Apple now facing these challenges, if you will, and Apple, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, is yeah, you know,
feel Apple, very old.
Apple is, you know, one of the most. What is? Correct me, please, Scott. What is it? They're the most profitable company, the wealthiest company. What are they?
They have the biggest market cap.
Okay. You know, they're doing great. In other words, not that they were doing bad 20 years ago, because they were doing fine. They, you know, that was the dark old days. Came about 94 to 96 or whatever before Steve Jobs came back. So they were very profitable back then. But I mean, they are like, I don't know what, 20 times the bigger company now than they were then.
Oh, yeah.
And iOS is not like the Mac at 10% market share. I mean, they're a huge player in the market. So they're very much, you know, can fight this, but again, that plays against them, like you say, and some press and some writers want to say, oh, they're just a big bully now. Everybody should be able to just do what they want with their ideas and, you know, no matter how hard they worked, you know, they get to where they are now.
Well, Google and Samsung have certainly argued that things that are out there should be fair use, which is kind of interesting because they're not the ones that came up with them.
Yeah.
But I think it is interesting. Apple's image probably has taken a little bit of a battering because of this. People see him as the bully and all that. I think for the most part, okay, given the current patent system and given the current patents in question, I have no doubt that this was the right decision. And I have no doubt that Samsung was just being way too overeager in their copying and way too blatant about it. So I don't have a problem with it at all. I do agree that as a massive company And as somebody who's very dominant in this mobile industry, Apple needs to monitor itself. Sure, they need to make sure they stay on point. They need to make sure that they keep doing the right things and they keep doing the right things for the right reasons. But that is true of any company that gets to this level of success and any company that gets this huge. They will face the same problems. And you've seen it time after time. Look at Microsoft. Look at any company you can think of that was the dominant player in an industry. At some point, it faded away. It's like the Roman Empire. Bad things happen inside and they suffer. You know, so Apple has to fight those things internally. But it's not because they're going out and picking on these poor companies. It's because they're a huge company now, and they're just going to face the same challenges that all big companies face.
Right. All right. What do you think? I guess I'll do it for our first show, first new NAAP.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a lot of fun. I definitely think it's interesting to look back and see not only how much Apple has changed, but also that the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's very...
Right.
Similar situations. So I hope that we gave a comprehensive enough look to people to stir their imaginations a little and maybe go back and read some of these links that we'll post.
And it'll probably happen again. And, you know, it wouldn't be unbelievable that maybe something related or this type of a thing might happen in the tablet market. You know, the iPad is hugely dominant right now. Now, granted, it's another iOS device, but you know, the Android ones are coming on strong, and it could just be another boring copy of the smartphone sort of litigation. But who knows? It might be some other. You know,
and I think that's probably. You know, I tend to agree with the people. I can't remember everybody who's espoused this theory, but Jim Dalrymple of The Loop, I think, was one of them. That Apple did this for a reason. It's not just for the past products; it's for the future as well. And I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure that what you said speaks to that point because, yeah, as other tablets come along right now, it's really, you know, I jokingly use the expression that I've heard elsewhere. There is no tablet market. There's an iPad market. And that's still pretty much true, but that will change. And also, what other products is Apple going to come out with that they just don't want copied? So, yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. They don't want to go through this again with the next, you know, big tablet that comes out.
Well, one day in the future, we'll talk about the rip-off Google Glasses.
Yeah. Yes. Excellent. We'll have to get ourselves a pair.
Just wait. Yeah, that'll be great. So not only people walking around talking to themselves, but now not watching where they're going too. Yeah,
now they've got ads popping up and they can't see where they're going. That'll be brilliant.
So that's going to be it, folks, for this show. Please spread the word. You know, tell people about the show. We exist on iTunes. We're still there. So this show will go up there. So please leave us a review. That would be extremely helpful. We'd love to have your feedback by, I guess for now, Scott, you know, everybody just email either me, David@classiccomputing.com or email Scott at.
Which email address am I giving out? Okay. Let's just go with pocketpodcast@gmail.com. That's for my other podcast, but that's a great way to reach me.
Okay. And we'll worry about maybe we'll get a show email later on or something.
Sure.
Go to notanotherapplepodcast.com for the discuss links and show notes. What else do I want to say? Oh, yeah, you know, email the show, email us. But also, what I love to hear is, you know, audio feedback. Do you like audio feedback, Scott?
It's the best.
I think that'd be great. You know, it's a podcast. It's audio.
We want to hear it.
Yeah, try your luck. It's easy. It's fun. Do
it. Anybody with an iPhone or an iOS device can just open that recording app, and there you go. And
or GarageBand.
Attach it to an email. Yep, exactly.
So. And what else do we need to say?
I think that's it. I just think that, you know, people need to be aware that this show is coming back. Definitely some changes have been made, and maybe it'll take us a couple episodes to get a feel for how things are going to go. So just be patient with us and, you know, keep hanging in there.
Yeah, we hope you enjoyed it. And we're open to ideas too.
Yes, but not criticism.
No, none of those. All right, everyone, take it easy. I'll see you later, Scott.
All right.